I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest Trans Europe Express podcast with me, Danny Kelly. Joined for this one by Mark Langdon, driven through the snow to be here, so thank you very much to him. We're going to hear about the latest from Italy, where the title race has been once again blown wide open. We'll also hear from France, where Neymar has laid down five demands to stay at PSG. He wants a loyalty bonus. He's been there over 6 months. And, of course, we'll go to look at what happened in Spain, where Seville, according to Jose Mourinho, the greatest team that ever had football boots upon their feet, got beat by Leganés. All of that, plus the usual polls, music and fun. You're listening to the Trans-Europe Express podcast. Have a belting time.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, Danny Kelly's Trans-Europe Express on Talk Sport.
Yes, thank you very much indeed to Andy and the gang for the last 3 hours here on TalkSport. Welcome to a slightly later than usual version of Trans-Europe Express. I'm Danny Kelly. Alongside me tonight, Mark Langdon, world football expert and writer of the latest to be finished World Cup guide anywhere on the planet. Is it finished yet, Mark Langdon?
Nope.
It's about 8 weeks till the World Cup.
Yes, that's right. I told the editor it was ready a couple of months ago. Final tinkering.
But they're hoping that this is going to be a bestseller.
Yep. I mean, people will still buy it after the tournament's finished, won't they?
Oh, it'll be in print for years and years and years to come. Mark's with me as we go through a review of all this weekend's action in Europe. We'll have a European cult hero for you, some musical homework relating to two goal-scoring feats over the weekend. Simon Calder will continue his World Cup travel report, this time with the city of Kazan as his target, if you like, and the World Cup scouts report with Mark Langdon as well. We've got a poll for you as well. All the usual stuff, stuffed, to use that word twice, into just 2 hours of radio. Thank you very much indeed on a Sunday night, a cold Sunday night, at least here in the capital, for joining us on Trans-Europe Express. I always regret that we don't get to the third verse of Trans-Europe Express, where he mentions David Bowie and Iggy Pop. Maybe next week we'll do a little different cut of the music. Welcome aboard, Mark.
Good evening, Danny.
Thank you very much. First question, as always, it's not as important as his name or a git, but have you been out to any lap dancing clubs with famous ex-footballers since I last saw you?
Patrick Cliver keeps on texting and ringing. Yeah. I'm going to have to block him.
He's a string now, isn't he? He's a string vest, that lad. Yeah, absolutely. Let's get on with the actual football. And where shall we start this weekend, Mark?
I think it's got to be Italy.
Totally.
It's got to be Italy.
And our headline, and it's a close-run thing because we were watching them as they were playing Forza Napoli. A brilliant, brilliant weekend for the Naples team.
Yes, maybe those that were writing off Napoli's bid for the Scudetto, premature. It did look like it was a forlorn chase, didn't it? Because Juve kept winning and kept winning. Well, they didn't win this weekend. They slipped up a 0-0 draw away to relegation threatened Spal. Napoli took advantage. Eventually, it was very nervy for a long time tonight, but eventually they
scored.
Particularly
for our young producer, who had a few bob on the result, yeah.
It did, but Raul Albiol, not the most obvious of scorers for Napoli, and not the most obvious way for them to score. We're used to seeing them pretty triangle passes and beating teams that way. This was a corner, a flick on Steve Bold-esque, really, but rather than Tony Adams running round the back to nod it in, it just went into the corner.
It was like
corner.
Roy Keane's goal against Juventus all those years
ago.
It's exactly the kind of direction of the header, wasn't it?
It was, and the stadium, it went absolutely crazy, bonkers.
You
as
said
expect.
if you had your choice of any stadium to be in between now and the end of the football season, it would be in Naples if they win the title.
Oh, if they win the title, Naples will be the place to be. The fans are...
Well, we know you love a party,
Yeah, well, you won't get a better party than this. The fans have been so absorbed in this title race, and I'm glad that it's back on, because it would have been a real shame, I think, had Juventus kind of done what Juve always do and grind it out
right,
and
well,
win
let's
it.
I think we need to talk about two things. First of all, we should make the note that it's back in Napoli's hands now, and Juventus, of course, because they're only 2 points behind the champions from Turin. They have still to go to play in the new Juventus stadium, so that's either side has it in their hands as we speak. Juventus' 0-0 draw with Spal. I mean, I was here working on the various FA Cup ties yesterday. I was watching it, not out of the corner of my eye, I was watching it quite directly. Juventus had lots and lots of the ball and all the rest of it. But they didn't look... Spal couldn't be claimed to be unlucky to get the point. Juventus keep on doing these performances where they just do enough, and sooner or later you're going to stub your toe.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. You know, they are relying on winning games 1-0 and 2-0, because what usually happens is they eventually grind out the 1-0. Teams then open up and they'll get a second one on the counter-attack. They beat Atalanta in not a great performance in midweek, which was their game in hand. Maybe...
And complacency, I think, then, because that result... It didn't win the title, but it looked
gave
like...
Gave them the
okay.
buffer. Yeah. It gave them the opportunity to drop points, and that's exactly what they did. But that's what you don't expect Juventus to do, because they're so ruthless and so efficient. But I feel maybe the fact they've been on the go a lot in recent weeks. You know, Coppa Italia, they've reached a final there. It's two-legged semi-finals. They had that game postponed against Atalanta, which then had to be fit into the midweek programme. They had two very hard games in the Champions League where they put a lot into those matches before they...
Don't remember those.
No, before they eventually beat Tottenham. But they're not a perfect team. In midfield, there are definite issues that still need to be resolved, which is why I think they're so eager to sign Emre Can. And up front, Dybala, Higuain, Mandzukic, Douglas Costa. It's a frightening front four when they're all on it. But like I say, Mandzukic only just coming back from injury. The other three have had to play virtually 90 minutes all the time because of they haven't got anybody else. Cuadrado's out at the moment to come into that rotation. And because there's so many midfielders and defenders out, they can't change the system. So maybe it was a tired performance from Juve. They didn't create an awful lot. Alexandro had one chance. Mandzukic a diving header. But Spal, a team that were in the third division not that long ago, two successive promotions, got Antonucci once of Leeds up front, that kind of tells you their budget, did brilliantly to hold on for a draw.
Absolutely. The only downside for Napoli from a weekend then that's seen them get right back into the title race, an injury to Hamsik, but we don't know how bad it is.
No, I think Napoli supporters obviously love Hamsik and all that he's been and done for the club in recent years. In fairness to Sarri, the coach, he believes wholly in the replacement. Zielinski called him the new Kevin De Bruyne a couple of weeks ago. I mean, that is something to try to live up to. But he's somebody that he believes can play that role.
How old is he?
Zielinski, young 20s.
Shouldn't he be in our poll then for who's the best young player in the world today then?
He could maybe be somebody that you could throw in there.
I'm only joking because obviously the poll, for those of you who want to take part in this, is on Twitter, at TalkSport, at Danny Kelly Words, at Mark Langdon, any one of those on Twitter. After Mauricio Pochettino's statement that he believes Dele Alli's the best player under 21, under 22 in the world, we put up four names for you. Dele Alli, Kylian Mbappe, Marco Asensio of Real Madrid, and Leroy Sané, whose form this season I suspect means he will win this poll. But you're perfectly welcome to go and vote in there at Danny Kelly Words, at Mark Langdon, or at TalkSport. I'll give you the latest on that when we get the initial findings in.
Zielinski's 23.
So he can't go in this.
He's maybe a year too old. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, thank you for that. Meanwhile, the music tonight, I'll just give you that as well. The music homework is songs with four in the title after four fantastic footballers got four goals at the weekend. Mauro Icardi got four for Inter Milan. A bit more about that in a second. Mohamed Salah, of course, got those excellent goals at Anfield for Liverpool. And Cristiano Ronaldo got four tonight for Real Madrid. He's had a terrible season. He's finished, isn't he? It's all over for CR7. So if you want to go and vote for those, it's simply at Danny Kelly Words, or you can text me your request. Songs with four, the letter or the figure, anywhere in the title. So it can be 24 if you want. 64, whatever. It is 81089 on the text, and you can tweet me directly at Danny Kelly Words. Yeah, four goals for Icardi in a 5-0 win for Inter at Sampdoria. I don't know whether this is an amazing win for Inter or shows up Sampdoria for what they really are.
Maybe it highlights definitely Samp's limitations. I mean, at one stage, suggesting maybe an outside sort of bet for Champions League when they were doing so well and they beat Juventus, if you remember, back in November. Actually, the last team to take the lead against Juventus in Serie A. That's how long ago it was that Samp did that to Juve. Inter, I think, had been threatening this to some extent. I mean, they hadn't done a lot wrong when they were kept dropping points, but they got a very good draw recently against Napoli. And if you've got Icardi up front and backfiring against his former club, four goals, including a 14-minute hat-trick, the back heel finish is absolutely sensational.
It's on Twitter. It's fantastic. The result takes Inter back into the Champions League places. I wonder if Spalletti, whether he was joking or not, still thinks all his players are rubbish.
He did say that. Candreva felt that it was just a way of G'ing them up. We'll have to wait and see. Spalletti was caught off guard with some of those comments in a restaurant. He's been quite loose with his tongue. He's frustrated as well. I think he's an outstanding coach that hasn't quite got it right this year. And Inter, of course, were threatening themselves to be in the Scudetto race around about Christmas. It's gone horribly wrong for them in 2018. They were back to where they need to be, and it's going to be a thrilling race for those four Champions League spots. I think Roma, 1-2-0 against Crotone today. I think they'll be in. We are now looking at Inter, at Lazio, and at Milan for that full spot.
It is fantastic. I mean, a bit further down in mid-table, Torino managed to lose at home to Fiorentina. And Walter Mazzarri under a bit of pressure there now.
Talk that maybe he'll lose his job. I mean, it hasn't long been in there. It wasn't that long ago. He replaced Mihailovic as coach. Veretout, formerly of Aston Villa, missed a penalty, then scored. It looked like Belotti had saved Torino with a late goal, but wasn't to be. Fiorentina won that game 2-1 and hasn't worked out at all for Mazzarri. Watford fans won't be overly surprised, nor will Inter fans. He did well at Napoli, but that was some time ago now.
Yeah, and that result, I mean, it kind of it leaves Torino stuck in the middle of the table. And
almost the worst place to be for fans,
Their season now looks dull, doesn't it? That's the problem there. You mentioned that AC Milan are still in the race for the Champions League places following a 3-2 home win against Chievo. Another winner for Andre Silva.
Yes.
Now, what about this player? Can he earn his keep and stay at AC Milan? I'm not going to pretend it's my knowledge. You think he might go to Wolverhampton Wanderers?
There was a lot of talk that he would go to Wolves in January. I think financial fair play made it very difficult. There's a lot of Championship clubs screaming about Wolves' how they're getting around financial fair play. I think it's fair to say at the moment.
He's not a Mendes player.
He is a Mendes player, and definitely I think we've got a situation here where he scored two winners in a couple of weeks now, so that's helping him with the Rossoneri, but he hasn't settled in Italy. Maybe these goals will help him, but if Milan don't qualify for the Champions League, they're going to have financial issues themselves and financial fair play issues. So maybe one or two have to come off the wage bill anyway. Donnarumma could be one. Kalinic, who's pushing with Silva to maybe be that starting striker. Cotrone, of course, the young player. But in terms of Kalinic, he's been dropped from the squad. Gattuso said he's not training well enough at the moment. So he's another one that could be on the market. Gattuso, all about hard work and that kind of ethic, so not working out for him.
As we go through all these big leagues, we'll have a look, and some of the smaller ones, we'll look at the squads, just as England got their friendlies, they've got their pre-World Cup friendlies coming up. Obviously, Italy do not have a World Cup to go to, but they've got these big friendlies, including the game against England, and it's not the people who are left out for me, the big headlines, the people who are in this club, Gianluigi Buffon and Giorgio Chiellini.
Building for the future.
Well, they both retired, didn't they, after the World Cup playoffs?
I suspect this is some kind of goodbye where they're hoping to...
Arrivederci?
Yes. In terms of Chiellini, he actually... a doubt about his participation, maybe due to injury. But yeah, I'm assuming that this is kind of Buffon, because it was such a low point when Buffon went out and they weren't expecting it. It kind of makes sense, I think, to have a better send off for him. Maybe, I mean, Italy do hold on to their players.
This is exactly the kind of messing about in friendlies that got them into the World Cup draw against Spain that led to their elimination from the tournament.
Yes, they're not learning their lessons of that.
I would love them to have a proper send off. But this is another game that Italy will just tick off. I mean, it's another word beginning with a T there. Their squad, although no Romagnoli, no Balotelli, no Zaza, on paper, Harry Kane not in England squad. Italy have got a better squad than England.
Yeah, I think you could definitely argue that. I mean, because I think what we've got a situation here is, of course, that Italy, like you said there, are not chucking the game in terms of, you know, oh, let's build for the future. That, you know, they are still trying to win matches in terms of the coach, Di Biagio. He's only a caretaker. If he were to get a big victory at Wembley, would that get him the job on a full-time basis?
It wouldn't do any harm, would it?
It wouldn't. I mean, I think Conte's, what happens with him could well decide what Italy do. They're clearly waiting, I think, to see what happens there. But they are still a very good team. Likes of Verratti and Jorginho's in there. So, yeah, I mean, they give England a good game.
Well, we'll soon know. They've got Argentina and England coming up, so decent test for them. Who's your star of the week in Italy?
It's got to be Icardi. Yeah. 4 goals, 14-minute hat-trick. Fantastic.
Thank you very much, dear. You know our poll. You know our music homework. And next up here, we're going to be talking about the football that's happened over the weekend in France, including all the very latest on a no way is he a git, Neymar.
It's 4 in the morning, and once more the dawning just woke up the warning in me. Wishing I'd never met her, knowing if I'd forget her, how much better off she would be.
What a great start. Well done, everybody. Back in the depths of the day, and one of the great country records to ever make the charts in this country, Farron Young and 4 in the morning. As we start to do songs with 4 in the title to celebrate the 4 goals scored by Icardi, Salah and Cristiano Ronaldo this weekend. You can get your votes in. You can be as modern as old, whatever. As long as the music's good, we're happy to play it. 81089 on the text. Tweet me directly at Danny Kelly Words. This poll is blowing up, as I believe Dar Kids used to say. Who is the best young player in the world currently? This is following Mauricio Pochettino's declaration. Dele Alli is one of the people in the list. Kylian Mbappe is another. Marco Asensio is the third. And Leroy Sané is the fourth. And of course, what we're getting now is lots of votes. And you should go and vote at TalkSport, at Danny Kelly Words, at Mark Langdon on Twitter. And lots of people saying, what about, what about, what about, what about, what about Mark Rashford? What about Marcus Rashford? What about, what about? So if you want to say what about, you can do that as well. Most of these polls seem to throw up more whatabouts than anything else. As once again, at TalkSport, at Danny Kelly Words, and at Mark Langdon to vote in that poll. Our next headline is Nice Time for Football as we talk about France. And this is a really interesting story that you brought to our attention, Mark, that a kickoff time in an important game in a European league dictated by
China. It's not Chinese demanding it.
No.
It's the French
reaching out, as people say now.
It is.
Reaching out.
And actually, make a good point. They're behind the Premier League and they're not going to catch the Premier League in terms of China. They're not trying to. But the Chinese market is so big that even if they get a small fraction of that pie, it will still be tasty for them.
Yeah.
So we've got a game today between Nice and
Mark knows how to get me interested. He's talking about a large pie, of which you could have some.
And I am a bit hungry.
Because we started late. I've completely misjudged the eating as well. I'm starving.
So it was Nice 1, PSG 2. The game kicked off at noon our time, so 1 p.m. Unusual for France, particularly on the Sunday. Next season, the Champions Trophy, their version of Community Shield, that's going to China as well. So they are making a big effort for this Far East market.
If India and China get that interested in soccer ever, the global market expands overnight exponentially, and you need to get a chunk of that straight away, don't you?
Yeah, and what they were after a game that featured PSG for obvious reasons, but mm-hmm. they didn't want it to be PSG against Dijon and get an 8 or 9 nil. You know, that would be of no interest. They weren't allowed to show Marseille versus PSG because the French broadcasters have that one down as lockdown, has to be played mm-hmm. Sunday evening. So they thought PSG needs a team that's been in Europe recently. Balotelli is a big draw.
And they got a decent game.
And they did get a decent game. And it was fantastic, actually. Nice took the lead. Balotelli hit the post. And Di Maria equalised a Saint-Maximin's early opener. And then Dani Alves popped up with a winner. But Nice played well. It was a good game for any Chinese viewers that did tune in would have enjoyed it.
And that is an amazing story about them moving the timetable around to try and attract Chinese viewers. But the next story is, of course, the most important ongoing story in European football. Is Neymar a git? Amazing Neymar revelations every week. This week, Mark, I'm going to sit back, plump up a cushion and just listen to what you're about to tell me and the listeners.
OK, well, first of all, it's been reported in various news outlets that Neymar's unhappy with his current wages.
Oh, no, the poor lad.
And believes that he deserves a pay rise and wants a pay rise.
On the back of what?
For his loyalty to stay at Paris Saint-Germain.
For another month, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But there's been a report in a Brazilian media outlet that says he's unhappy with his time at PSG. And this is why. These are a combination of reasons.
If we had the old top of the pops, we would count down from 5, 4, 3, 2... Go on, him.
So here we go.
At 5.
Unhappy with opponents fouling him.
At 4.
Referees don't protect him.
At 3.
Too many bad pitches in Ligue 1.
At 2.
The low standard of French football.
Which he could possibly have never have researched before going there. And finally, number one reason why Neymar feels he really needs a loyalty bonus or to leave France is...
They take too many coaches to away matches and he'd prefer to fly or get the train on a more frequent basis. And tied in with that, he's also unhappy. Unai Emery makes the players stay at a hotel the night before matches.
Now, it does strike me that he could buy a private jet for the whole team and a string of hotels around France, because flashing very brightly on the screen in front of me is the latest report that Neymar is on a reported £780,000 a week. The poor soul.
Yeah, he's talking about getting it up to nearly a million.
Oh, you gotta. Otherwise, they'll take the mickey out of you. You're a mug to accept £780,000 a week.
But do you know, this becomes a very serious issue for Paris
Saint-Germain. Imagine how many peanuts you could actually buy with that peanuts. It'd be amazing, wouldn't it? The mountain of peanuts you could buy.
This becomes a serious issue for Paris Saint-Germain, because if Neymar becomes so important to the owners that they can't get rid of him, a manager, and we're talking the absolute top-level manager, they're required to win the Champions League. I think a lot of them will be turned off by the prospect of Neymar dictating when he plays, when he doesn't play, the time of the meetings, how they travel to matches, and that will disrupt
absolutely
the whole camp.
Any manager worth a salt will be asking this question. Is Neymar a git? Big game tonight in France and late drama.
Oh, absolutely. It looked like Marseille picked up a point against Lyon. They equalised to make it 2-2. But Memphis Depay, not for the first time this season, scored with virtually the last kick or header, as it was, of the game. Lyon, a team battered and bruised by the fact that they're out of the Europa League, a competition that they wanted to do well in because the final's in their own stadium, have got themselves back into the Champions League race. They're only 2 points behind Marseille now. Had they not won that game, I mean, Marseille would have been comfortable holding on for third. As it is, we haven't got a race in terms of the title. We've got one for third spot.
And indeed, on Friday night here on TalkSport, we had George Boateng in the studio, and the former Dutch international. When I was taking the mickey out of the standards of Dutch football, he said, "Wait till we see this game against this upcoming game against England." He says Depay, Strootman, etc. He says they've not got the worst team. They've got young players who haven't yet adapted to European football. But he says the Dutch cupboard is not quite as bare as we make out.
Well, no, I mean, Ajax have got, you know, likes of Justin Kluivert, and the centre-back is another one that they think a lot of. I think they've been seriously mismanaged for a long time. Talking of managers, just on Lyon.
Klassen's gone to the wrong club at Everton.
I just think he's rubbish, I have to say. I didn't think he was anywhere near good enough for Everton or the Premier League. I just thought he was too pedestrian for the Premier League, and he'll definitely have to go to a league that suits him more. maybe, I mean, Italy's not as slow as it used to be, but I mean, maybe that kind of league. But we're talking mid-table team, a Torino or Fiorentina. That's his kind of level. We're just talking on the managerial front. Ranieri has been linked with the Lyon job. Genesio offered his resignation, actually, after that CSKA Moscow defeat. Wasn't accepted. But at the end of the season, they could be on the lookout for a new manager. Ranieri, currently in charge of Nantes, has been one that's been linked with that position already.
That winning goal for Lyon, of course, is going to be, I'm just hearing in my headphones, is going to be causing tremendous trouble in France, because it came from a decision where Mitroglou was breaking away, was given offside, despite the fact he was in his own half. His head may have been offside.
He's got quite a big head, hasn't he, Mitroglou?
Big enough to be offside. Meanwhile, Monaco won at Lille on Friday, despite being behind. Yaya Sanogo, got a couple of goals for Toulouse. I'm just running through those quickly because I want to get on to the French squad. I'm one of those who believes that France can win the World Cup. And so very, very interested in where we're going now with Didier Deschamps and their squad. And I guess the two outstanding things to talk about with the French squad is no Dimitri Payet in it, but what about the person who has come into the squad?
Yeah, Ben Yedder, somebody that was playing...
Unknown in this country 4 days ago.
I'd wonder if they call him Ben Header after that goal he scored at Old Trafford in midweek. But yeah, Ben Yedder, somebody that turned... I think it was Tunisia, tried to get him to play for them. He turned him down numerous times. I mean, it was ambitious, I felt, that he wanted to, hold on for France. And yet here he is, with the World Cup just a few months ago, with an opportunity. Obviously, Benzema...
causing you to delay the writing of your book, I presume,
exactly,
and they keep changing the squads like this.
This is a key point, Danny. But
to your publisher, who must be listening.
But somebody like Giroud doesn't play every week for Chelsea. When he did play, he didn't get very good reviews. Lacazette is injured at the moment.
Yep.
Mbappe prefers to play wide. Griezmann, obviously, one of the first names on the team sheet. They like to play 4-4-2. Ben Yedder, I'd still say it's unlikely that he would be a starter for France. But if you're in the squad for the final round...
You could make yourself indispensable. Anthony Martial is in the squad.
Yes, I fully agree with that. I think Martial is just an outstanding talent that maybe hasn't got the manager that fully got trust in him even now at the moment.
Martial's got no heritage.
He's got a lot of quality. That is the one thing he has got. And Lucas Hernandez in the squad from Atletico Madrid. A tug of war over him with, would he play for Spain? Would he play for France? There's a couple of players like that, Laporte being another one that's had options. Lucas Hernandez, it is in the French squad. Atletico Madrid player has had a troubled off-field history, I think it's fair to say, with domestic violence charges against mm-hmm. him. So he's somebody that comes with some baggage, but he's definitely a talented player. Payet, interesting one that he wasn't selected. I think this could just be a case of Deschamps knows what Payet can offer the team, wants to have a look to see if anybody can do more, and if not, he can always bring him back.
And Manchester City's Laporte, not in the squad, so running out of time to make the French squad?
Yes. There was talk as well that, would he be playing for Spain? So, it's been an ongoing issue, that one. First of all, he's got to be playing for Manchester City, and he's not.
Then he's got to get past Varane and Umtiti.
Yes. He's played at France for, for all levels, in under-18s, under-21s, and, he's been around that. But obviously, he's in the process of being available for Spain as well. So, but like I say, he needs to be playing for Manchester City before I think we can start talking about him playing for one of these two high-quality nations.
John Stones doesn't play for Manchester City.
No, but England haven't got the amount of options that Spain and France have got.
Who's your star of the week in France, Mark?
My star of the week in France is Unai Emery.
Beast.
He made the tactical change, if you remember, in the Bernabeu, when he took off Cavani, brought on Meunier, and moved Alves further forward.
An idiot like me was bewildered by that, I've got to be honest.
Absolutely slaughtered for it. He did the same move today. Dani Alves popped up with a winner with a Cavani-esque header from about 9 yards out.
He's a genius. The man's a genius. Then PSG do not need any new managers from North London whatsoever. Thank you very much indeed, Mark. Coming up next, we'll be talking about what's going on in Germany, including for people who speak the English language and have the mind of a 13-year-old schoolboy, a new manager at Hamburg with the most extraordinary surname. Now I'm 4 or 5 seconds from wildin', and we got 3 more days till Friday. I'm just trying to make it back home by Monday morning. I swear I wish somebody would tell me, oh, that's all I want. Woke up an optimist, sun was shining, I'm positive. Well, one of the wonderful things about having music homework, it keeps proving over and over again how many teenage girls listen to Trans Europe Express, which is just great. They're voting in vast numbers for this. Rihanna, Kanye West and Macca, 4.45 seconds it's called. Keep your songs coming, please, with any appearance of the word four or the letter four anywhere in the title as we continue to celebrate the foursomes, double brace, hat-trick plus one, call them what you like, over the weekend of Mauro Icardi, Mo Salah and Cristiano Ronaldo. Let me give you the latest from our controversial poll. Of the four players we put up to be the best young player, i.e. 22 or under in the world, Dele Alli's trailing behind. He's useless, 10%. Marco Asensio, 16%. Kylian Mbappe, 29%. But winning by a mile at the moment is Leroy Sané with 46%. And you can vote by going to any one of these Twitter accounts, at TalkSport, at Danny Kelly Words, at Mark Langdon, to have your say. Loads of you saying, well, Wolves fans are saying, David Ratcliffe and many other people who go in Wolves scarves are saying Ruben Neves is the best young player in the world. Mark Langdon, you missed him out.
Well, Neves, obviously, I don't think he's quite as good as that. But if he could be playing for a top Premier League team this season, it's very strange he ended up at Wolves.
Yeah, OK. Darren Bradley is talking about Marcus Rashford.
Yeah, I mean, he's not as good as the four we've got in the poll.
Daniel Lynch is talking about Joshua Kimmich. But he's too old for this poll. I think he's 23. The same can be said of Bernardo Silva. Many of you are asking about Bernardo Silva. Kieran Tierney of Celtic also getting lots and lots of support. Go and vote, though, for the four we have put up there. And I'm delighted Dele Alli is now regarded as one of the worst players in the world. Perhaps he can stay for a few more miserable years at Spurs. Let's move on to our next league. There's no way around this. I have asked pronunciation experts, and I'm not just trying to do it to get a cheap laugh. The headline is, it's all gone tits up at Hamburg. Well, we'll come on to why we're doing that. But first, we should talk about the game between Leipzig and Bayern Munich.
Yes, and for the first time in 20 matches, Bayern Munich have suffered a defeat, a 2-1 against Leipzig. It was the Leipzig of old, actually. We saw much more energy from them. Naby Keita.
They were driving force of it.
Yes, absolutely. Got the equalising goal and then set up Timo Werner, a substitute, actually. He was left on the bench because they're involved in, obviously, this Europa League as well. That's been taking quite a lot out of them in recent weeks. So he was left on the bench, came off the bench to score. I was surprised with the Bayern Munich starting 11. The fact that Sandro Wagner scored...
Tells you.
they prioritised the Beşiktaş Champions League game in midweek, even though they were 5-0 up. So... they're not interested when they win. Man City, Guardiola talked about winning the Premier League as quickly as possible, or Vincent Kompany certainly did. You know, he wanted to get it done in the Manchester derby. Bayern could have done exactly the same and had it the Clásico just after the international break.
Can't do that now.
No.
And speaking of Dortmund, a 1-0 win for them over Hanover. I wonder who scored.
It's who else, isn't it, at the moment in terms of, for Dortmund. Batshuayi from a corner, lovely backheel finish.
Really good to see.
A flick rather than, we mentioned Icardi's one before. Icardi was on the floor and backheeled it. This was more a flying.
Kung Fu style.
Exactly, from Batshuayi. Again, he's not great in the build-up, which is why I think that Conte didn't trust him at Chelsea. And maybe at that level for somebody that wants to be...
But he doesn't trust Morata and he doesn't trust
Giroud either. There is that. But I Batshuayi would certainly do a very good job for somebody if you just ask him to score the goals. Because, like I said, he can be a frustrating player. But Dortmund fans are certainly enjoying him. And they haven't missed Aubameyang. Which they've got problems elsewhere, but that's not one of them up front.
Yeah, they've got 99 problems, but Aubameyang ain't one. Now talk to me about Hamburg.
Right. Well, the bad news is Hamburg lost by 2-1 against Hertha. Douglas Santos scored.
You do know that I'm planning to make a bid for the atomic clock that shows how long they've been in the Bundesliga. When they go down, I think it looked great along the length of the studio here.
It would. Actually, their fans were singing songs, Never Second Division HSV, which was HSV being what Hamburg are known by in Germany. Never Second Division. Not sure about that.
They now managed to get themselves, because Cologne's victory over Leverkusen, which is an astonishing result.
A derby game.
In its own right. Yes, that's taken Hamburg to rock bottom.
It has taken them to rock bottom. However, and hence the headline, it's all gone tits up for Hamburg under their new coach, Christian Titz.
T-I-T-Z, people, so we've got no way around this. Unlike the Brazilian coach, who we can call Tite. Absolutely.
Do you know what, though?
Where did they get tits from?
They got him from they got him from the youth team, Danny, which is a well-trodden path for Bundesliga clubs. And they basically said, I think they've just said, we're down, let's try something different and see if we can perform a miracle.
And boy, he started with that.
He's ripped the team up completely now. Some will say fully deserved. These experienced players have had long enough. The average age of the team was under 24. It was the youngest team since 1974.
Wow.
We had players like Harper, who's 18 years old, in the starting 11. They played high press football, high energy football. The goalkeepers near the halfway line starting attacks, kind of Guardiola, Manchester City style. So they've completely changed their approach. Papadopoulos, one of the old stagers, he had a press conference after the game where he said, it's a shame that experienced players who have managed to save Hamburg before weren't in the team. Sometimes the best solution isn't always to try something new. I think it has to be. I mean, what have Hamburg got to lose?
Nothing.
And if they do go down, these players and this philosophy could be what
that
gets
club
them up.
That club has been doing a Sunderland. It's been messing around there for the last 4 or 5 years. It needs to go down to renew itself. And that's the truth of it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Absolutely truthful.
Let's hope
about
that. Let's hope Titz gets the job for a while yet.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, listen, that defeat for Leverkusen out of the blue there at Cologne means that Frankfurt are now in the Champions League places. Just want to mention that. Schalke, second with 49 points. Dortmund, 48. Frankfurt, 45. Leverkusen, 44. And Leipzig, 43. Make up the 5-3 race for the Champions League places in Germany. Let's talk about their squad coming up to a World Cup, which, of course, they're hoping to defend. Interesting choices up front.
Yes. I mean, in terms of Mario Gomez, somebody that most people probably wouldn't pick because of his style of play and the fact he's had a pretty average season. He's just hit a purple patch now. But Germany haven't got anybody. And this is Yogi Love. Is not necessarily interested solely in form. That's why somebody like Lukas Podolski was in the squad for as long as he was. He likes certain characters to be around the place, and he also, I think, wants variety in his attack. So he doesn't want all of his forwards to be like Timo Werner. What's the point of that? You know, you've got your Timo Werner. Lars Stindl is somebody that can play as a kind of 9 or a 10 if you need him to. Mario Gomez is just your out and out number 9 target man forward, the plan B, if you like, for Germany. And he's in the squad. He scored a couple of goals for Stuttgart.
I want to come back to the Bundesliga in a second, but I've got to ask you, the time is running out now for the World Cup. Is Ter Stegen going to start ahead of Neuer?
Well, we have to see when Neuer will be back. We just don't know.
We've been
yet.
Saying that for 3 months now.
Yes, but if he comes back and even plays 2 or 3 games, I think that will be enough. The one who's definitely missing out at the moment, Bernd Leno, another horrible mistake today. He just makes too many. I mean, if Ter Stegen's in goal, it's not a bad situation, but I do think Neuer will come back before the end of the season and force his way in.
I actually completely forgot when we were talking about the bottom of the table with Cologne, Hamburg replacing Cologne at the very bottom. Of course, Wolfsburg lost 1-0 to Schalke. They could very easily have won that game. They missed a penalty while it was still 0-0 towards the very end. And now Wolfsburg are above the relegation zone, or at least the playoff relegation zone with Mainz, by goal difference only. What would it mean if Wolfsburg were to go down?
Well, they were in the relegation playoff last season, so it would mean a lot in terms of, obviously, we've spoken about this before, the Volkswagen
scandal. One of the wealthiest clubs in Germany.
They were one of the wealthiest. I mean, they've still got more money than some, but they haven't spent it particularly wisely. They've had a lot of managerial changes.
Oh, this is after Volkswagen falsified all the figures for yes. pollution emissions, and the sudden
that
of scandal, the sales of
And that runs the whole town, basically. So it's a big job. Just on the German national team, very quickly, no Marco Reus in that squad.
Yeah.
Spoke about the balance. They've obviously got Sane. They've got Julian Draxler. I still would like to see Reus in there, but time is running out for him.
And your star of the week in Germany?
Mario Gomez, back in the Germany squad. Scored twice for Stuttgart in their win at Freiburg on Friday.
Well, we seem to have got through the section about the new Hamburg manager, who we'll keep you abreast of throughout the rest of the season here on Talk Sport. And next up, we'll talk about what's going on in Spain. One of those bands that had two separate careers, Chicago. In the latter part of their career, they made a load of soppy ballads that went to number one all around the world. But before that, their first three albums are absolutely searing rock, funk, funk, rock. And this is their best song, 25 or 6 to 4. Listen to those horns. Songs with four, anywhere in the title, please. Should I try to do something? 25 or 6 to 4. Text me 81089, tweet me directly at Danny Kelly Words. Marco, sorry. Mark Langdon, why don't I call you Marco? They've gone European on your ass. Mark, your headline for the goings on in Spain, not a leg to stand on for Mourinho, and we'll come on to that in just a second. Real Madrid had a tremendous victory over Girona. Well, you'd expect them to beat Girona, although they didn't earlier in the season.
They didn't, no, when they were playing, that was kind of the start of their crisis, if you like, but they've paid back time for Girona, who... But I mean, I like the fact that Girona went to the Bernabeu. I mean, they're safely tucked away in mid-table, so they, you know, just played. They played Real Madrid at football, made for an entertaining game, got turned over 6-3.
Nine-goal thriller.
Yeah, I mean, Real Madrid love that type of football. You know, maybe a structured game is where they'll struggle. We'll get on to their Champions League battles with Juventus that won't be quite so open. Cristiano Ronaldo, wasn't that long ago, people were wondering if he was finished, too old.
Well, as we saw with the European Championship, didn't we? He's now taken to timing his runs in the season for the latter half of the season.
Andy Brassell was talking about this on this very show a few weeks
ago.
Very
poor, isn't he, Andy Brassell?
he was talking about the fact that, you know, he's peaking for the summer tournaments.
Absolutely.
And probably last World Cup. So what an opportunity for Ronaldo. He's, I mean, you know, four goals tonight. Gareth Bale scored as a substitute. Lucas Vazquez also on target at the Bernabeu. Stuani, once of these shores, got a couple of goals for Girona as well.
Well, look, we ought to talk, though, that there is a need. I think it's understood that there is a need to... what Nat Coombs would call re-up the Madrid squad. And two of the players that keep getting looked at there, former Spurs players, of course, Gareth Bale, and, of course, much further down the career path, Luka Modric.
Yes, in terms of Gareth Bale, I mean, I wouldn't say they're forcing him out necessarily, but they are certainly putting pressure on Gareth Bale. The fact that he's not starting in enough matches at the moment. A couple of seasons ago, he would have been, you know, one of Zidane's sort of trusty lieutenants. That's not the case anymore. I mean, he'll surely want to play. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that would be happy sitting on the bench anywhere. I think that there'd be a few Premier League teams that would love to have Gareth Bale back playing for them.
There's probably a problem with his wages, even by Premier League standards.
Yes, it wouldn't be a problem for Manchester United. I mean, they've already shown that with somebody like Alexis. Maybe Chelsea, if Eden Hazard were to go the other way. I mean, swap deals are not easy to do, but that might be some kind of interesting manoeuvre.
I must say, we should mention the fact that Stuani, who you mentioned there, formerly of Middlesbrough, one of his goals tonight was headed. He has now got more headed goals than anyone else in that league in a season.
I mean, it's quite remarkable because you wouldn't
remember the rules. Just because you fail in England doesn't mean you're a bad footballer.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing in a team, like I say, that creates a lot of chances by a kind of, you know, mid-table standards. But even so, he's having a fine campaign.
Yeah, good for him. Which takes us on to Seville. Now, we know from Jose Mourinho's 12-minute, not rant, that's not the right word, recitation of the facts that Seville are one of the global powers of football. Indeed, they may be one of the greatest teams that God has ever put laces into their boots. So how does he explain their 2-1 defeat at Leganés today?
Yeah, not an easy one to explain. I mean, the simple answer is that Sevilla aren't that good, and Manchester United just made them look better than they are. But Leganés had more shots in 90 minutes than Manchester United managed in 180, got the 2-1 victory. What you could argue is that maybe Sevilla, who put a lot into that Old Trafford game...
They were terrific as well. But everyone was going about how bad Manchester United were. But I thought Sevilla were great with the ball.
And Montella didn't make wholesale changes.
I'm presuming that's enough to get him the job now, is it, Montella?
In terms of next season, yeah. I mean, probably. I mean, it went down very well with the fans. An historic result, really, for them to win at such a famous venue in the Champions League, taking them through to the quarterfinals. But in La Liga, they're out now of the Champions League, down to sixth spot.
Okay, Barcelona beat Bilbao by 2-0. A result notable for Messi's goal.
Yes, the first time he scored from outside the penalty area in open play in La Liga this season. I thought Barcelona, best 45 minutes I've seen of them this season. They were absolutely outstanding. Could have been 5, 6, 7. It was just brilliant. No Suarez, but Alcacer came in and scored. Messi got the other one. You know, Dembele, Coutinho out wide. It was like watching Barcelona a few years ago.
And a quick look at the Spanish squad. They've picked another team that will be looking to win the World Cup.
Yes, well, I think that the big exclusion is that of Alvaro Morata. Yeah. I mean, obviously, he'd been out of favour for some time at Chelsea. I would have thought a couple of months ago he would have been probably the most likely starter for them. Diego Costa now got that wrapped up, I would have thought. And Morata's battling for his place in the World Cup squad.
Meanwhile, one of his Chelsea teammates, who people have been calling on for years to get in the squad, is in.
Yeah, Alonso, finally, after a couple of brilliant years for Chelsea. I mean, he couldn't displace Jordi Alba, but a chance at making...
But he brings a different thing. He's a more powerful physical presence than, say, Alba.
He is. I wonder about the technical ability in that Spanish team. That's not really what they're after, that power. It's all about how you keep the ball. And so Alba's relationship with, say, an Iniesta it would be the deciding factor.
And who's your star of the week in Spain, Mark?
Inés Unal, formerly of Manchester City, scored twice for Villarreal in a 2-1 victory over Atletico Madrid today.
Thank you very, very much indeed. And we will continue to investigate the mystery of how Leganés, with all their power, managed to overcome Seville, whose loads of their players would get into the Manchester United squad, says Jose Mourinho. I mean, I know it's easy to take the mickey out of that press conference. So we will. You're listening to the Trans-Europe Express here on Talk Sport with me, Danny Kelly, and him, Mark Landon. We love having you along for the ride.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, Danny Kelly's...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Trans Europe Express on Talk Sport.
Yeah, welcome back to the second hour of Danny Kelly's Trans Europe Express with me, the aforementioned Danny Kelly, and Mark Langdon, one of my trusty wingmen here, without whom the show would mean nothing. Also, thanks to you, Sunday evening this time, you could be doing anything, getting ready for tomorrow and the return to work and all that, so we're very glad to have you along for the ride, a ride that will include a full review of everything that's happened in the Champions League and Europa League last week and a preview of the quarterfinals of those two tournaments. A very special European cult hero for you, Simon Calder's latest report from Russia on the towns and cities and stadia you can expect to go to if you're going to the World Cup. Every game live here on Talk Sport. We'll bring you the latest from Turkey, Portugal, Holland, Greece and Belgium. And then Mark will continue his our World Cup previews. And we'll draw two more teams we haven't talked about yet out of a hat, and we'll see where we go with those. We've also got the most controversial poll of the series so far, in which over 10,000 of you have now voted. I'll talk about that in just a second. And our music homework. You're listening to Trans Europe Express here on Talk Sport. So the poll. Okay, we asked who the best young player in the world was. The rule is 1996 and under. The date of birth. You can't have people like Dipala Dybala. He's a middle-aged man by comparison to what we're talking about. And of course, at the moment, Dele Alli lagging behind, even worse now, 9%. He'll be pulled up by the jockey soon. Marco Asensio, 16%. Kylian Mbappe, 28%. But still out in front is Leroy Sané with 47% of the vote. Adam Sullivan asks about Ryan Sessegnon. Well, he's a great young player. Whether or not he's in that kind of company,
should be in the England squad.
I believe he missed a trick there. Yeah, put him only into the 21s. I am teaser, says Leon Bailey. Much talked about here on Trans Europe Express.
Yes, I mean, Leon Bailey had a poor game today for Leverkusen. I think he would be below the kind of standard we're talking about, but, you know, he's somebody that could get to that level. But, like, I don't think he's as good as the four we've got in the poll just yet.
Also much discussed, Milinkovic-Savic, but he's also too old, Daryl. Sorry. Cecilia says, has to be Dembele. Cecilia, you need to tweet again. Which one are you talking about? The one, well, Ousmane Dembele or...
Oh, the Celtic one, Moussa. I'm hoping it's Ousmane Dembele. He's somebody that, if we were doing this poll this time last year, probably would have won it, which goes to show how quickly...
Who did you vote for?
I voted for Mbappe. I mean, I think he's having a fine season for Paris Saint-Germain and is just... extraordinarily talented, although I understand why people have gone for Sané, because he's having a good season and it's obviously most people watch the Premier League and say he's doing it in that.
And I vote for Leroy Sané as well because of what he's doing in the Premier League, and also to try and keep the lowest possible profile on Dele Alli. And I'm surprised that you didn't mention that motivation as well, Mark. Let's talk about the Champions League. We'll go through the quarterfinal draw in a second. I just want to talk about one or two of the games. I mean, obviously, only two English teams got through, which means that's obviously Spurs, Chelsea, Manchester United went out. Let's talk about Chelsea first, that game against Barcelona, because although it looked like a wrecking scoreline, I thought Chelsea were in that tie from start to finish.
It sounds crazy, doesn't it? Well. It sounds crazy to say a team's unlucky to lose 4-1 on aggregate.
But they were.
I mean,
they hit the woodwork five times in the course of that.
They did, and it was mistakes that cost them. Christensen in the first game, and then Courtois, who's not having a great season actually by his high standards, getting done for particularly the first goal. Fabregas gave away the ball for the second one. It was all pretty avoidable, really, from Chelsea's point of view. They were good in the kind of middle area. It was just in both boxes that they fell down. I mean, if you were doing a very short match report, you could say Barcelona had Messi and Chelsea didn't, and that
could arguably be the history of world football for the past several years. And we'll see what happens in the World Cup with Argentina
I mean, somebody like Valverde, the coach, probably just can't believe his luck. You know, to have somebody like that in your team, it's an absolute dream.
And yet, Barcelona have only won the Champions League once in the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah,
probably not good enough.
It's been a struggle for them in the most recent campaigns. Obviously, won it under Luis Enrique, and people were saying that team was better than the Guardiola one. Don't think it was as good. I mean, individually maybe, but not as a team collective.
Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, all at their absolute best with Messi in front of them. Goodness.
Exactly. Goodness. I mean, this Barcelona team just plays in moments. They are pragmatic. They played very well today.
And in that way, they reflect a little bit Juventus, don't they? They know when the moment comes in a game to go for the throat.
They do. And obviously, if you've got Messi, that becomes an easier task.
Yes.
And they're looking to be very solid defensively. So, Piqué and Umtiti, probably for the first time, probably even more than the Guardiola team, this is probably an area where they are stronger.
Goalkeeper and the two centre-backs are proper, yeah.
Yeah, they are. I mean, Jordi Alba's playing exceptionally well at left-back. Right-back, Sergio Roberto, still there. Looked like he was going to be displaced, but no, he's still there. I still think he's a weakness in that position. Busquets' broken toe is a concern. I mean, Rakitic played there today and did very well in the holding
role.
Which
I thought was the obvious replacement. That then leaves a hole where Rakitic normally plays.
Paulinho played in Rakitic's position.
They're not the same player, though.
They're not. I mean, Paulinho's a versatile central midfielder. I think he can do any job that's required of him. But nobody has got that relationship like Busquets has got in terms of him being able to drop and make it a back three. Busquets,
and he and Piqué have done this for so long and so successfully.
Yeah, he takes the ball off of Piqué, then gives it into midfield. He's somebody that, clever tactically, he stops the play when it needs to be stopped. You know, he does the dirty stuff as well. So he is a loss.
They've drawn Roma. They would expect to beat Roma.
Yes, they will. I mean, Roma came through against Shakhtar. Shakhtar lost their heads in the second half of that game in Rome. Once Roma got the goal that sort of put them at the advantage with the away goal, maybe Shakhtar kicking themselves that they didn't get another goal at home. As far as Roma are concerned, I mean, there's a mismatch there if Messi gets up against Fazio one-on-one running at him. That would scare the living daylights
out. Still needs the Roma goalkeeper to beat.
Alisson, just a phenomenon, really. To be better than Ederson.
I just saw some stuff he's done the last week.
He comes out, can sort of kick the ball over opposition defenders.
He's got a Cruyff turn I saw him do as well.
He's got the lot. I mean, him and Ederson push each other, you know, for the next 10 years in terms of that position.
Lucky old Brazil.
We'll see how good Alisson is in these two games against Barcelona.
Absolutely. Now, look, Seville won in Manchester, and here in the British media, of course, all we did was say how terrible Manchester United were. I think a little bit of credit to the way Seville... it's not that... Because Mourinho is right. They did hide the ball, something they've been doing in the away legs of European ties for 10 years now, and very successfully. But that takes tremendous technique and courage to do it.
It does. It does. I mean, I just want to just briefly talk about Manchester United.
Yeah.
How on earth a team with that quality spending power can turn a 180-minute tie into a 20-minute sprint when every Sevilla goal is worth more than every Manchester United goal is just bonkers. I mean, there's no way for a favourite to play. If you're an underdog,
to not try and score away from home, where anyone with an eye in their head sees in the Champions League and the Europa League, the big teams, the first thing you try and do is make sure you get on the score sheet away from home.
Exactly. Teams are sort of settling for a 2-1 defeat as, yeah, we'll take that.
But to see him clapping the team off in Seville for a turgid 0-0 draw, I thought, really? It can bite you in the bum, and it did.
It did. Obviously, the substitution bringing on Ben Yedder for Luis Muriel made a huge difference, came on, and within no time he'd scored twice,
which was so ironic because Mourinho had hoped to turn it into a sprint for the end, and indeed they did, and they lost the sprint finish.
But that was just absolutely the wrong tactics. But I thought Nzonzi, you mentioned them in midfield, I thought Nzonzi, when Mourinho talks about players getting into the Manchester United team, Nzonzi probably be somebody he'd love to have in his midfield with the way that he plays. Banega, very good in there as well.
Okay, let's look forward now. I mean, looking back, and we've already said that Barcelona will probably do a number on Rome. Seville won't have enough for Bayern Munich, the form they're in.
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought Bayern Munich would win that game, and actually the flack Mourinho has been getting, maybe nothing compared to what he could get if Bayern Munich do put on a decent score against Sevilla.
Juventus against Real Madrid, of course, is a repeat final of many times and recently, and still a great tie, and a test for a Madrid side that's coming into form at the right time.
I think this is a very interesting game. Juve, worth pointing out, Benatia and Pjanic missed the first leg through suspension, the yellow cards they picked up against Tottenham at Wembley. And with Chiellini going off, we don't know how serious that injury was against Spal. That could be an interesting
Pjanic
one.
Is a big loss, isn't he?
Yeah, because Pjanic is their tempo setter in midfield.
Nothing spectacular, but the ball keeps getting rotated through him, doesn't it?
And he also is brilliant at set pieces, corners, free kicks into the box. It's been an area of weakness for Real Madrid. Juventus very strong, Mandzukic, the defenders coming up. So not having that delivery will be difficult. But what Juventus will do is not give that much space for Cristiano Ronaldo. They'll be very happy for Ronaldo to play in the box, because I think Chiellini backs himself to be able to mark anybody in those type of situations when it's touch tight. Didn't happen in the Champions League final. A lot of rumours about Juventus falling apart half-time in that game, being dismissed, but keep on getting stories about something went wrong for them at half-time in that game. Dani Alves didn't play for the club again. Bonucci left after that as well. So maybe no smoke without fire in terms of that. I would expect Real Madrid to win, but it could be a close old game, that one.
And in the heated balls derby, Liverpool against Manchester City?
I can't wait for this game. Usually hate sort of all nationality yes. ties, because you see them every week in their respective leagues and you like to see the difference. But Liverpool Man City was so good at Anfield. Another two legs of that, you know, I'll take all day long.
Absolutely.
Manchester City, you know, a 4-3 defeat as they got away at Anfield would actually be not a bad result, would it, at home? They've been the outstanding team, but Liverpool will believe that the way they play can unsettle City. I just think this will be the game.
If this ended 6-7, you wouldn't be at all surprised over the two legs.
Oh, over the first leg, Danny, the way that they're both capable of playing. Neither team will shut up shop here. They'll go for
each
other.
Should be belting, yeah.
Just favour Manchester City, but not by much again.
Some good stories in the Europa League. Let's start with the draw. It's Leipzig against Marseille. Arsenal go to Moscow or play CSKA. Atletico Madrid against Sporting Lisbon. Lazio against Red Bull Salzburg. So two Red Bull teams in the last eight. And I think the Austrian team are the one that really caught your eye.
They are, because they beat Dortmund in the last round and deserve to beat Dortmund. And I think that result really put them on the map. And it's the result they've been looking for. This is a team that's been flying under the radar probably for too long, because they keep missing out on the Champions League. They've had so many hard luck stories in terms of trying to qualify for that competition. I think it's one defeat in 52 matches in all competitions for them now. Now, a lot of those are in Austria, where they are the dominant
team. They're
walking
away with the Austrian Bundesliga, yeah.
But in the Europa League, they've done very well. They won the UEFA Youth League last season. Now, that, I think, should have made everybody sit up and take note of what's going on here, because somebody like Naby Keita, he came from the Salzburg team through the Red Bull franchise, if you like. Then he goes to Leipzig, then they sell him on. Upper Meccano, the centre-half that everybody's raving about at Leipzig, another one that came through this Salzburg Leipzig sort of rotation thing that they've got going on. A lot of interesting young players. The one that caught my eye was Hadara in midfield in the victory over Dortmund. But it could be any one of them, really. They've got... Everybody is so negative about Red Bull's influence on football at the moment, and rightly so, I think, in Germany, because of the way they bent the rules to do it. But actually, what they are trying to do, I don't think it's a bad thing. So much emphasis on youth, on developing players, on getting coaches to play progressive, attacking, high-press football that most people like to watch. I think there are worse ownership models.
Oh, and
sure.
Let's be fair, the Premier League is not short of those.
Well,
frank. The other title we need to talk about is Arsenal against CSKA in Moscow. In many ways, one, they've avoided Atletico Madrid over two legs, and two, from a footballing point of view, I know I've spoken to you about this on Friday, you think this is a belting draw, apart from the politics and the travel, but on a football field, a belting draw for Arsenal.
Yes, obviously the political situation be quite dodgy, I think, at the moment. You know, for the Arsenal fans that are travelling, you know, it's maybe not the greatest time to be going to Russia as an Englishman, probably fair to say. However,
none of Arsenal's players are owners, Wilshire, sorry.
No, but just in terms of the actual game, I mean, I thought this was the ideal draw. I couldn't believe that CSKA overcome Lyon after losing the first leg 1-0. You look at the play. I mean, the Berezutsky twins, Ignacevic, are still the back three.
Over 100 years between them at the back.
Yeah, I mean, Ignacevic feels like he's sort of that on his own at times. Zhigoyev and Golovin, the midfielders. Golovin, somebody that's been linked with Arsenal before.
Zhigoyev's also a veteran, isn't he?
Yes, I mean, Zhigoyev's not actually that old. He just feels like he's been around for forever. But Golovin is the one that everybody's talking about as potentially, you know, somebody that can actually go to maybe a top European league. And he has been linked with Arsenal in the past. So for his point of view, if he can get a couple of good games against Arsenal, that would help him. But, you know, when you could have got Leipzig, when you could have got Atletico Madrid, when you could have got Lazio, you'd settle for CSKA all day long. And Arsenal, I think, deserved that because they got it rough in the last 16 playing Milan. And the way that they dispatched them was pretty impressive.
It was. Let's talk about Madrid very quickly then. Will they take this competition seriously? And could we see a Madrid double in the European Championships?
Well, Atletico Madrid will take it seriously for the simple reason that they're running on a squad of about 16 or 17 players this season now after selling Carrasco and Gaetan to Chinese football. So there is no rotation from Diego Simeone. Even when the tie was won against Lokomotiv Moscow, they were in Russia, he still brought on Griezmann just to make sure, and he scored a brilliant chip goal. They can't win La Liga. They're out of the Copa del Rey. I'm sure they'll give this everything from now on.
Fantastic, Mark. Thank you very, very much indeed. We'll get to say more musical homework. There'll be more news from the poll very soon. But next up here on the Trans-Europe Express, a very different, still very worthwhile, I think, a European cult football hero for you. You're listening to Trans-Europe Express, and he is Mark Langdon. Yeah, the Langdon's in the house. Another song with a four in the title. This is Fourth Rendezvous by Jean-Michel Jarre. Was it a World Cup theme? I'm just trying to think. Was it 1998 World Cup theme on ITV? Yep. So that's why all you lot know it. Thank you very much indeed. Keep your requests coming in for songs with a four anywhere in the title, a figure or the word to 81089 on the tweet, on the text 81089. You can tweet me Danny Kelly words. We're celebrating the fact that three top players, Mauro Icardi, Mo Salah and Cristiano Ronaldo, all scored four this weekend in European football. And with that one football tune going away, here's another one as we head into our European football cult hero.
Incredible! Incredible Zlatan Ibrahimovic!
Ronaldo! That's magnificent!
Get back up! Get it back up!
Yeah, Mark, we normally have a player, always have a player here, but today it's not.
No, we're bending the rules. Yep. We know that Rob Daly did that a few weeks ago when he picked a current player in Naldo. So
yep.
We've gone for Ajax, who are celebrating their 118th birthday today. I think it's fair to say that their influence on football probably about as great as any other club, or certainly right up there with any other club in terms of their overall contribution to football.
Absolutely. If I may go back a little bit and say that, you know, Ajax has been around for, as you know, 100 years now, although they were a cricket club as well. More on that a little later. But I'm a little bit older than you, Mark, and so all that you're going to say about the influence they've had over the last 15 years, 20 years, I'll go back to the early 70s, and I'd been watching English football, you know, as a teenager and all the rest of it, and English football teams played 4-4-2 ever since they won the World Cup, and you had a big man and a little man up front. Everybody played very strictly in their position, and English football was very good. It was brilliant to watch, and the grounds were a laugh and all the rest of it. And then Dutch teams started to win the European Cup, and the Dutch national side started to be unbelievably good. And you started to watch these teams. I mean, mostly it was Ajax, but it would be wrong not to remember that Feyenoord also won the European Cup around the late 60s, early 70s. But the change in the way football is being played, where with these Dutch teams, with the players, too much is made with the word total football, but what it was unbelievably fluid, players changing position, not being afraid to hold a ball at the back. And, of course, and this is often lost with teams who now try and play total football, is that Kroll, Naiskins, Hahn, Van Hannigan, they could all put their foot in as well at a time when you had to do that. But that Dutch team blew my teenage mind apart, but also blew world football apart. I know you're desperate to say that, but the Brazilian team of 1970, which people thought was going to be the greatest football team anyone ever saw, was already consigned to memory by Dutch teams, including Ajax, and particularly Ajax, within 2 or 3 years.
Well, it's just the fact that, of course, that kind of team that was based around them in terms of World Cup, when people say nobody remembers losers,
it's
complete nonsense, because we still speak about that. How big an influence do you think Johan Cruyff was on football then and still is now?
I think Johan Cruyff, who came out of that Dutch team, of course, is the most important figure in 20th century football. Certainly since the 1970s. You'll have had people like Jules Rimet, who organised the global game and all the rest of it. But Cruyff, first as a player and then as a coach, and what he's taught other people, particularly with Barcelona. Well, don't forget, he takes a club that's struggling under the jackboot of, that's not the right word, under the boot of Real Madrid for years and years and years. And by sheer power of thinking, understanding the game, geometry, you just told me a tiny thing.
Yeah, well, Frank de Boer was on BT a couple of weeks ago. He upset Jose Mourinho, didn't he, when he said about Rashford under the wrong manager. And he told a story about Johan Cruyff believing that the best player on the pitch should take a throw-in, because when the throw-in then came onto the pitch, he would be the only player that was unmarked. And so you would immediately give the ball back to the best player. And that little thing of being able to see differently, revolutionary, that kind of...
And you look at the coaches, and I mean, we're starting here with Guardiola, they're all disciples. Many of them are disciples of Johan Cruyff. So the answer to your question is yes, I genuinely believe he's the most important figure in world football in the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah, I mean, and I was just looking at their Champions League team that won it in 95 and reached the final in 96, and it is an astonishing...
This is their second great coming, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, obviously, that they've been... players are leaving too early now.
Yes, the financial
the
game has changed.
The TV money. But Van der Sar in goal. Then you had Reiziger at right back. Frank de Boer at left back. Blind at centre half. Seedorf and Davids in midfield, with Lippmann and Fanidi George, Ronald de Boer, Overmars.
And these were all young players. Your mate Patrick Kluivert.
My mate Patrick. And then the team after had Kanu and Winston Bogard, who obviously had a bad time in England, but for a while was considered to be a very good defender. You have Frank Rijkaard as well, of course, in that first team. So the way that they still teach, but I mean, somebody like, even now in the Premier League, you'd have somebody like Eriksen and Vertonghen came through the philosophy, that school. And it just it seems to be just still developing players.
Alderweireld,
as well. And you've also got the next wave. Everybody's talking about Justin Kluivert and players like that. De Ligt, Frankie de Jong, a midfielder that I think could be very good as well.
And
so
just to say that, you know, a couple of years ago when I was doing Yap Stam for My Sporting Life, we went to, and I hope that in the pressure that's on the club through the money that's in other countries now, they don't give up, because the thing that I went to see where their youth team was doing its thing, extraordinary. They've got a lovely mini stadium, so the players are always playing in front of a crowd, so they get a feel for that. And I was in the canteen where two extraordinary things happened. One, you just see Overmars, Van der Sar just wandering around the club canteen. The young players are all excitable teenagers, but when comes mealtime, they all have to put their phones in a bag and the bags are taken away, so they sit and talk to each other. And I just thought, wow, they're trying to bring these young fellas up to understand the value of everything and to be a team. And then as I was going, it's a modern building. As you go around it, there's all these stained glass representations of great Ajax teams and great Ajax players from the past. And the last one has got a man playing cricket. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, we actually had a cricket team before we had a football team. Now, Ajax cricket team still exists, but I think the two things are completely separate now. But they were originally English people coming there, as I understand it, because the bloke spoke average English, and I haven't done enough research since then. But there's definitely a cricket element to the Ajax story as well. And look, I totally get it, that along with clubs like Benfica, you could argue Celtic and Rangers, that the TV money that's come into Italy, France, England, Germany and Spain means that the days of those kinds of clubs doing what the likes of Ajax did may be behind us, but I don't, we should never, ever forget what that particular football club has done.
And why I think it was such celebrated that they reached the Europa League final last season. Now, they didn't turn up in that final and were well beaten on the night by Manchester United, but just getting there was a tremendous achievement for them. And they sing the Bob Marley song of Every Little Thing's Going to Be All Right as well, Danny. So that's another reason to
And that's a million great reasons to really honour Ajax as our European cult hero.
Incredible! Incredible Zlatan Ibrahimovic!
Ronaldo! That's magnificent!
Get it back up! Get it back up! Get it back up!
Yes, Simon Calder is the country's leading travel expert, and each week here on the Trans-Europe Express, he'll talk to you about a town or city in Russia and the adjoining stadium that you might visit if you're going to the World Cup. Remember, every game is live here on TalkSport. Here comes Simon.
Stadion. Stadium.
The Kazan Arena began life as venue for the Summer World University Games in 2013 when it hosted the opening and closing ceremonies. 2 years later, it hosted some of the competitions at the World Aquatics Championships. Yes, with two 50-metre swimming pools installed. Once all the running and the swimming were over, a football pitch was laid at last. You might recognise the style of the place because the architects were Populus, the same people behind Wembley, the Emirates and the Olympic Stadium in London. Viewed from above, the arena, which stands on the banks of the Kazanka River, resembles a water lily, says FIFA. Capacity 45,000 people.
Матчи, которые нужно посмотреть. Matches to see.
Six matches are going to be played in Kazan, starting on the 16th with France-Australia. On the 20th of June, Iran will take on Spain, and 4 days later, Poland-Colombia. I'm going to be watching that one. 27th of June, South Korea against Germany in Group F. And then into the round of 16. 30th of June, it's the winner of Group C and the runner-up of Group D. And finally, there's going to be a quarter-final on the 6th of July.
Rating путешествий TalkSport. TalkSport travel rating.
I really like Kazan. Catherine the Great declared it to be the third most beautiful city in Russia after St. Petersburg and Moscow. It's known as the Istanbul of the Volga, where Europe meets Asia. The Cathedral Mosque of Kazan is decked in a confusion of scripts, Russian, the lingua franca of most of the people who worship there, and Arabic, the language of Islam. And then there's Lenin, as Vladimir Ulyanov, he studied for a while at Kazan University. Now, you might remember Mick Jagger got thrown out of the London School of Economics and started the Rolling Stones. When Vladimir Ilyich Lenin was ejected from Kazan University, he created the Soviet Union. Oh dear. The market in the city, anyway, is called the Intestine of Kazan, and I stayed in the Youth Hotel across the river from the main part of Kazan, and only £60 a night. And would you believe you can dine in the city's Baker Street restaurant, where the specialities are Japanese. The TalkSport travel rating out of 5 for Kazan is a surprising 4.
I don't know, you people, when you go, I throw the music open to you, and this is where we go, is it? Madonna and Justin Timberlake, of course, and 4 minutes. Keep them coming, please. Songs with four or the figure four anywhere in the title. 81089 at Danny Kelly Words. No disrespect, I'm going to cut this short because if you keep playing, so I'll do the poll. So thank you very much. Ever controversial poll, over 12,000 of you voting on a Sunday night. Thank you very, very much indeed. Who's the best young player in the world? Dele Alli down 9% now. Marco Asensio 16. Kylian Mbappe 28. Are still leading with a slightly reduced majority. Leroy Sané with 47% of the vote. You can go to at TalkSport, at Danny Kelly Words, or at Mark Langdon on Twitter to vote in that poll. Now I'm cutting the Timberlakester and the Madonstrous down a little bit, because we've got a lot to get through this next section. We whiz through all the other leagues in Europe. I think the obvious place to start, Mark Langdon, is Turkey, where there's a fantastic race for the title and the top four played each other.
They did, yeah. The Super Saturday and Super Sunday.
Super Sunday.
In the Super League, of course, as Turkey is known. Fenerbahce 0, Galatasaray 0. No goals, no red cards. You wouldn't have fancied that.
You work for the Racing Post. That must have been almost impossibly unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, usually if there's no goals, you're at least good for four red cards.
Yeah.
But it means that Galatasaray stay top, but they're only 1 point clear of Basaksehir, who beat Beşiktaş 1-0 today. Probably knocks Beşiktaş out of it now that they're on 50 points in third. Fenner 48 points in fourth.
They've got still 6 games to go, though.
There are. I'm already looking ahead, though, to the April 14-15 weekend. Galatasaray host Basaksehir. So that could well be the title decider.
There's at least three titles up for grabs that day.
Yeah, that weekend we've got PSV against Ajax in the Dutch Eredivisie, and also Benfica against Porto.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed for that. So as he says there, Galatasaray 54, Istanbul 53, Beşiktaş 50, Fenerbahce 48 points. The only thing else I would guess we'd say there. No, that's plenty for now. Let's move on, if we may, to another tight race for the title, which you just mentioned there again, that in Portugal.
Yes, Benfica and Porto both won by 2-0. It means that Porto 2 points clear going... Well, I mean, there are a couple of games to go before we get into that kind of Clásico situation, but all points to that being a virtual title decider. Wouldn't expect either to drop points between now and then.
Okay, and Portugal, of course, European champions. What squad have they picked for these World Cup warm-up games?
Yeah, a very ageing one at the back, for sure. The likes of Jose Font is in it.
Bruno Alves is in it
as well. Further forward, it's a bit more exciting. You know, Bernardo Silva, somebody that can have a huge impact, I think, on the World Cup. And Ruben Neves, who we were talking about earlier on, despite being in the Championship, his performances have kept him in the squad. And, you know, interesting to see whether he can hold on and go to the World Cup.
I mean, no Pepe. Where are they going to find a young centre-half to actually defend their goal?
There is one from Benfica called Diaz.
Ruben Diaz.
Yeah, Ruben Diaz, who is being spoken about as a future Benfica captain, somebody that could well force his way into that squad for the World Cup. Fernando Santos, the coach, doesn't take many risks. If he takes one, it might be in that position.
Okay, let's talk about Holland. As you mentioned there, PSV and Ajax still, it's a race for the title, though PSV are red hot favourites. Robin van Persie got a couple of goals for Feyenoord at the weekend. He's starting to score for them now in a good game. Actually, they won 4-3 at Pek Zwolle, Jaap Stam's first club. But the big story, I think, comes from outside of the top of the Eredivisie, to do with the club Venlo.
They were beaten 3-0 by PSV, but the game wasn't overshadowed, but it was there was a nice moment in the fact that Lennart Tyre, the Venlo striker, didn't play in the game. He was he's a blood donor. There was found to be a DNA match for somebody who's got leukemia.
Wow.
And so he missed the game, you know, doing his good work, has to be said, and you know, just wish him all the best.
Lennart Tyre is the man's name, isn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Hats off to Lennart. Absolutely.
Just in that game, Van Hinkel got 2 goals. He's still on loan from Chelsea.
Of course, they all are.
He's veteran status, not one of the younger guys that's on loan. But that's 12 for the season in the Eredivisie now. For somebody that, you know, just plays central midfield, it's quite an interesting amount
almost,
of goals.
You could almost call him a defensive midfielder.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when he was sort of coming through at Chelsea, that was the position they thought he would, if he was going to make it, that's where it would be.
OK, let's talk about a league where no football happens, Greece.
Yes, still suspended after last week's, you know, just extraordinary.
Mark, I mean, you may not know the answer to this, but help me with this. Normally, when a government interferes with the football in the slightest way, FIFA goes straight off the deep end and says we suspend you from the World Cup and all the rest of it. But it's the Greek government who suspended the football here.
Yes, I don't think FIFA have got involved yet. I mean, obviously, there's no great hurry because they're not in the World Cup. No. So at the moment, the spotlight is still firmly on Ivan Savvidis, the Paok owner that entered the pitch with his gun.
Have they, last time I heard, he was on the lam. Have they tracked him down?
He's issued an apology. I don't know if that'll be enough. I mean, talk of Paok being relegated and all. I mean, I'm not sure they know what to do at the moment. It's such an unusual, even by Greek football standards, and we're used to seeing some crazy stuff. This is, most unusual.
One day we should set aside half an hour here on Trans Europe Express, and I'm not joking, to talk about Greek football and the belief, whether it's true or not, both outside the country, but particularly with fans inside the country, the thing is rigged.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a genuine belief that match fixing is just an everyday occurrence, and that the referees are in the pocket of X, Y, and Z. And I think that that's why every goal that's disallowed, that's controversial, gets such a strong reaction.
And
I mean, albeit
everybody plays 30 games, an absolute tussle, and then Olympiakos win the title.
Yeah, that has been the accusation. And of course, I think certainly when they were going head to head with Panathinaikos, Panathinaikos used to kind of point to the fact that the European results weren't that different to Olympiakos, and yet when it comes to the
domestic
Greek Super
games,
League,
yeah.
one team looked like they were much better. Of course, Pana have had their own issues, financial, as the whole country's had financial issues, and I think that has played a part probably in the bad feeling and the atmosphere around the stadium.
You're living in an economy that's struggled so hard for the last decade, and then you go to watch a football match for a bit of, albeit noisy, recreation, and then you don't believe that either. It's just horrible.
Yes. I'm not sure at the moment there's been any kind of date for when they will restart the league.
I must tell you, there's a beautiful thing in front of me. I've got the sheet with the results and the league table and everything. And Saturday, 3 fixtures. Sunday, 4 fixtures from the Greek league. Match postponed. And normally it says match postponed, stroke, weather. Match postponed, stroke, illness. In each case, it says match postponed, other. Something other has happened here in Greece. Talk to me, Dent. I mean, last week, Rob was very, very brave indeed and once again explained the league situation in Belgium now that they've broken up into about 45 atomised different leagues. You're more lucky this week. There was no league matches.
No, a cup final, and that it wasn't split into 10 periods or 16 different teams in the cup final. Right? It was just a normal cup final and standard Liège.
Name from the past, yeah.
Name from the past who maybe in more recent seasons hasn't quite worked out for them. Beat Genk 1-0, so they're guaranteed now to be in the Europa League next season. Other teams for the Europa League have still got to play about 15 matches and then a playoff.
If you're of my age, just the word standard Liège just says, European football, and there they are back in it. Well done to them. And if you used to listen to my old shows, Danny Baker, I'll just say the three words, standard Liège tie, and leave it at that. Most of you will know what I'm talking about. Their squad, of course, a hugely competitive squad for the upcoming World Cup. Well, who have they picked?
Well, they haven't picked Christian Benteke. He's average, awful.
Thoroughly deserved omission from the squad. In terms of, if I draw a scale of physical and football ability versus achievement, he's my least favourite player currently playing.
He's somebody that goes through the motions, I think, too often. And they've got so many options. Somebody like Batshuayi. I'm surprised Origi's in it. I mean, he's not been very good for Wolfsburg. But I think Benteke almost been punished, really, for just these apathies.
For ponying about.
Yes.
And Batshuayi thoroughly deserves his call-up. He's got his head down after what he could have got very disappointed at Chelsea. He goes to Dortmund, boom.
And just worth pointing out, they've only got one game. They're only playing Saudi Arabia, so while a lot of European teams are pitting themselves against sort of other top European teams, not the case for Belgium. Alderweireld's in it, Vincent Kompany's in it, Nangolan, he is in it. They clashed with Roberto Martinez on a number of occasions.
Can't they even eat in the same restaurant?
Nangolan tells a story of him and Martinez being in the same restaurant in Ibiza.
I'll give you almost money on that it's the Blue Marlin, but go on.
Did you enjoy your steak there, Danny?
I did not. Because I am not interested in professional love. or paying that kind of money for food.
Well, it appears that both of those players were more interested in the sunset and the surroundings than they were in each other, because they didn't even say hello to each other, which kind of tells you what their relationship is like. And I still wonder about how they will get on for a month in Russia.
And of course, right now, very quickly, it's the return of Bentner Watch. What about... He's back. What's he done?
He's been Nicholas Bentner this weekend. No goal, subbed after 77 minutes in a draw for Rosenborg.
Rubbish. Absolute rubbish. We'll watch Nicholas Bentner more next week. Coming up next here on the Trans-Europe Express, and we'll get two more of the teams previewed by a man who's written a magnificent book about all the teams in the... Oh, no. Who's planning to write a magnificent book about all the teams in the upcoming World Cup. Every game live here on TalkSport. Last of our songs with four in the title. Four in the morning, of course, Gwen Stefani. Thank you for all your help with the music homework. And don't forget, if you don't know already, there's a podcast of this show. You just go to iTunes, TalkSport as well. Download it. That itself is already award-winning, separate from the actual show. Multi-award winning. And you can join it. Yeah, just go and download it. It's great. I'm only cutting Gwen short, bless her, because we have a course now to do our World Cup draw, which involves me putting these envelopes into a hat. Here we go. Mark's going to talk about two of the teams that we haven't yet previewed. I'll just open the envelope here. Okay, well, this will test you, Mark. Of course, you're writing your famous book. Never going to be published. Japan.
Japan, in a very interesting group. Probably the most balanced group of the lot. Colombia and Poland and Senegal. So that there's an opportunity, I think, for everybody in that section to win it. Or
of course,
to
living
come
in London, I know loads of Polish people. They think it's an absolute walk for Poland.
It definitely won't be a walk for them. but Japan, it's more about the players that are not in their squad.
Isn't the manager determined to shoot himself in the foot or something?
Yeah, Ali Odzic, the coach, very experienced coach, has been to World Cups before and managed various national teams. Leaving out Kagawa and Okazaki at the moment, among others. Kagawa, because he doesn't fit into the style of play, more of a passing playmaker, and he wants people to go and press the ball and counter-attack. And Okazaki, he believes, can't play as a lone centre-forward. Now, I would always have thought that the coach really should get his best players and then get a system that...
At the very worst, Okazaki is a brilliant option, isn't he? And his energy, as has been remarked on before, it's not an original thought, makes him an addition to any team.
I'm sure you're aware of the Japanese saying, Yana Yori Dango.
Do you know what slipped my mind briefly? Just for all the ignorant people out there, what does it mean?
It means dumplings over flowers, and they've got more dumplings than flowers. So it's sort of substance over style type quote.
What is he talking about?
they're a team that's industrious, but not the prettiest to watch. And I think they will struggle to get out of that group.
Okay, let's have another one now. Just this an envelope. Let's open this one. Ah, I don't need to look already. The hosts, Russia.
Well, Russia, I mean, obviously for a lot of people, they'd be sort of the most unpopular of hosts. They're in a group that they would, when the draw was made, would have expected to have got out. Uruguay, I think, would definitely go through. Egypt and Saudi Arabia. Now, Saudi Arabia, first game against the host, that should be the 3 points. Egypt, with the way Mo Salah is playing, that it suddenly, with every passing week, that game, the decisive game probably in Group A, gets harder.
Russia at least divested themselves of their octogenarian players.
They have. Berezutsky twins, Ignacevic don't play anymore, but they've had an injury crisis defensively. They've had two of their players go down with tournament-ending injuries. And not only that, Kokoring, probably their best centre-forward, or certainly up there, one of their biggest goal threats, their most likely goal scorer. He did his ACL on Thursday for Zenit in their defeat to Leipzig in the Europa League. out of the World Cup. That's now three players they've got out. I don't think that they can sort of sustain and carry this amount of injury. So, I mean, it's never good for a tournament when the hosts go out early. Just wonder whether Russia, you know, Mo Salah could end their tournament.
Yeah, I mean, to me, obviously Japan, Korea was a different kind of thing. To me, the least fancied hosts for a long, 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 South Africa, I suppose.
Yeah, so I mean, South Africa, USA back in 94, obviously weren't the team. I know they've missed the World Cup now, but they were seen as novices back then. But no, Russia have done okay in some of their friendlies more recently, but went out earlier the Confederations Cup.
Well, let's just hope there's no skullduggery or Doug Scullery. Either will be bad, really, really bad.
The referees are going to be under huge pressure. And I mean, I think that's fair to say. Maybe leave it
even
at that.
With VAR in operation. Let's leave it at
maybe
that. Thank
even
you
more
very
so.
Much indeed, Mark. Mark, first of all, say thank you very much. Please get on with your book, because partly I'm dying to read it. I mean, you won't finish the blinking thing. It's been 3 months, David.
It'll be out early April, Danny, I promise.
In our poll, which literally thousands and thousands and thousands of you voted, Dele Alli, not the best young player in the world, according to you, 9%. Asensio, 16%, Kylian Mbappe, 28%, but Leroy Sané way out in front with 47%.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, Danny Kelly's Trans-Europe Express on Talk Sport.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.